Hello and welcome to this BJS podcast. I'm Wendy Barnaby and today we're focusing on bleeding in surgery, discussing papers from the October 2015 issue of the journal. We'll be hearing from Toby Richards, Rupert Pierce and Rob Hinchliffe. Let's start with you, Toby. You're the chief investigator of the PREVENT study on preoperative intravenous iron to treat anemia in major surgery. That's a National Institute for Health Research trial, and it won't be reporting for a few years yet. But in the meantime, you've published this review of patient blood management and surgical risk. And you tell us that anemia is common in surgical patients. How common is it?
So across the board, if you take inpatients coming in for a significant operation, and by that I mean something that they spend 24 to 48 hours or more in hospital for, a third of all patients will be anemic when they walk through the doors of the hospital. If you look at higher risk surgery, such as colorectal surgery, the incidence is about 40 to 60%, and it's maximum in patients presenting with fractured neck of femur, where about three quarters of all patients have anemia when they walk through the door.
So it's to help these patients have better outcomes that the NHS has guidelines, the so-called three pillars of patient blood management. Could you tell us what they are?
So the principle of patient blood management is the recognition and optimization of an individual's red blood cell mass. That's pillar one. Pillar two is to minimize blood loss. Now, in the setting of surgery, this is fairly self-evident. It's the use of tranexamic acid, cell salvage, point-of-care testing, and other surgical techniques to reduce operative loss. However, it also includes avoiding unnecessary bloodletting for routine blood tests. And another good example, which has been pioneered in some hospitals around the country, is the use of pediatric blood tubes for sampling of blood. And for a standard district general hospital, if you move surgical patients from routine blood tube sizes down to pediatric sizes, you will save 500 litres of blood disposal every year. The final pillar, which is pillar three, is the tolerance of anemia. And this is epitomized by the use of restricted transfusion practices. And intensive care is the prime example for that. Some 20 years now since the TRIC trial showed that a hemoglobin of 70 is as tolerable to a patient with the same outcomes as a liberal transfusion to a hemoglobin of 90. And there's a variety of surgical trials showing that you don't need top-up transfusions in surgical practice.
Toby, what did you find in your study were the hazards and risks of blood transfusion in surgical patients?
So this is a really important point to get right. Blood transfusion is an excellent service. It's led in the United Kingdom by NHS Blood and Transplant, who supply products to the NHS. Used in the correct environment, blood is a highly safe and effective intervention. But with all interventions, it's about using it appropriately. A very good trial that epitomizes this is the use of blood in patients with gastrointestinal bleeding. And coming out of a unit in Barcelona, the team randomized patients between a liberal transfusion strategy, topped up to 90, or a restricted transfusion practice where their hemoglobins were kept at 70. And in just over 1,000 patients, the difference in transfusion rates was in the order of 1,000 units of blood between the two. And what they found was that bleeding was increased by excess blood transfusion, and actually survival was increased, i.e. improved, by restricted transfusion.
Your review explores why patients have anemia and how it might be treated preoperatively. What do you think the best preoperative strategy would be for correcting it?
Currently, in the PREVENT randomized controlled trial, we're taking people who have preoperative anemia and we're randomizing them to intravenous iron or placebo. The question is, do we correct the anemia and improve patients' welfare prior to operation, and therefore consequently improve their outcomes following the operation itself? As yet, we don't know if intravenous iron is the most appropriate treatment in this setting. In patients who have truly elective surgery, such as a primary joint replacement, there's absolutely no reason why their anemia can't be properly investigated and managed in a timely manner. There are several hospitals throughout the UK now that are insisting on having a hemoglobin reported at the time of referral for their primary joint replacement. And where a patient is found to be anemic, they're managed on oral iron until their anemia is corrected before their operation. This may take several weeks, but for a primary joint replacement, that's not urgent.
And after surgery, how should surgeons manage patients with anemia?
For patients who are on the ward, you should try avoiding the use of routine blood testing. So not every single patient needs a full set of bloods and liver function tests every day. Simply taking more blood out of a patient will only serve to make them more anemic. Where a transfusion is indicated, if a patient is physiologically unstable or they have severe anemia with a hemoglobin of less than 70, then a single unit transfusion policy should be mandatory. And by this, I mean that you should transfuse one unit of blood and then stop and reassess the patient to see whether or not they need more blood.
Thank you, Toby, very much. Let's turn to Rupert Pearce, Professor of Intensive Care Medicine at Queen Mary, University of London. Rupert, you did a systematic review and meta-analysis of the association between preoperative anemia and mortality after surgery, looking at nearly 950,000 patients. Did you find an association between preoperative anemia and worse outcomes for surgical patients?
Yes, we did. There was a very clear association with increased mortality and also a clear association with other outcomes such as acute kidney injury and infection. There was some interesting pattern in cardiac surgery patients where anemia was associated with stroke but not with myocardial infarction, but we might conclude that's because the patient's coronary arteries have been fixed during the surgery. But overall, there was very, very powerful evidence that if you start out with anemia, you're more likely to have a poor outcome after surgery. What's interesting and what's a really important question is anemia simply a marker of chronic disease in those patients? Or is anemia itself what's putting patients at risk? I think what's most interesting about our analysis, though, is even though anemia may be a marker of chronic disease, these patients still receive red cell transfusions. So, and I think Toby's alluded to this, even if it's not the anemia itself, they're still having their anemia treated with red cell transfusions that could be harmful. So I think whichever way you look at these data from the systematic review, they suggest we need to change what we're doing.
And as far as the question about whether anemia is an independent risk factor or not, what studies do you think need to be done to clear that up and establish whether it is the anemia per se that's causing worse outcomes?
I think that's going to be very, very hard to do. And I think the obvious next step would be to do a randomised trial of a liberal versus a restrictive approach to blood transfusion in surgical patients. It would be interesting to know, for example, does blood transfusion alter the risk of cancer recurrence in patients having cancer surgery? Because there's good arguments that it might.
Rupert, intensive care physicians have really led the way with patient blood management strategy. And this has been highlighted by the TRIC study that's almost 20 years old. Do you think what you see in intensive care translates into the post-operative patient on the ward? And should we really be having a restrictive policy of down to 70 grams per litre as we do on intensive care?
Oh, well, that's a very tough question. I've got a prejudicial view and then a view that's informed by the information. I mean, my gut instinct in intensive care and hence in the management of all surgical patients is that I try to give them as few drugs as possible, as few treatments as I can manage. Because the more treatments you give, the more treatments that you give you don't need to give, and therefore the more side effects you cause. So I'm always trying to minimize the amount of blood products I give my patients. And I don't see that for the surgical patient that would be any different, even if they were no longer requiring critical care. However, when you look at the data, it becomes very difficult to say with confidence that a liberal versus restrictive, that there's a clear argument for one over the other. So I think that it would be hard to recommend a strict rollout of a restrictive approach based on the information we have. But I certainly think that it's a very strong candidate to study, and it may well turn out that it's at least as good, if not better, than what we currently do.
Let's turn now to Rob Hinchliffe, Associate Editor of the BJS and Consultant in Vascular Surgery at St George's Vascular Institute in London. We talked about various studies and so on that have been reported in the journal, but there are a couple of others, aren't there, that I think you'd like to comment on?
Yes, Wendy, there were two very good systematic reviews from the groups of Toby Richards and Rupert Pierce. But in addition to that, in this issue, there were two randomised clinical trials. One from a group looking at the effect of topical tranexamic acid after reduction mammoplasty. And as I'm sure most surgeons are aware, there's a great deal of interest in tranexamic acid in the prevention of bleeding, especially from the UK and further afield with the CRASH II trial. But effectively what the group showed was that topical tranexamic acid compared to placebo actually reduced bleeding in patients undergoing reduction mammoplasty. So yet more evidence that tranexamic acid, which is a safe and cheap intervention, may be effective. On the other hand, a randomised multicentre trial from the Netherlands, which investigated the use of fibrin sealant after coronary artery bypass grafting, was unable to demonstrate that this technique used routinely actually improved health outcomes.
So with this issue, Rob, are you hoping to put the management of blood in surgical patients really back on the agenda?
I think it's going to be prime importance. I think if you look at cardiac surgery, 4 in 10 patients will require a blood transfusion. And it's certainly becoming a big issue within the UK and has been a big issue within Australia, and potentially with ongoing trials such as the PREVENT trial, looking at the use of intravenous iron to try to spare the use of blood transfusions. I think it's a very topical issue and something that the British Journal of Surgery really wants to impress upon its readers.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Rob, and thank you for listening. Bye-bye.